This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Do you know how to find the right oil for your car? Now you can find out quickly and easily online, thanks to Castrol's Rego to Oil tool. Simply type in your Rego, select your state, and within seconds you'll know the best Castrol products to unlock the edge of performance in your car. So what's your car best suited to? Just search Rego, the number 2, and oil, and find out. G'day everybody, Aaron Noonan here. Welcome back to the V8 Sleuth podcast. It is episode 90. We're not far away from bringing up the century. My guest this week is Lee Holdsworth, and his podcast was so good we split it over two parts over 2 weeks, and this is part two. So on this part, we cover really his GRM era. We talk about his first supercars win in 2007, finishing on the podium at Bathurst, and the five-year contract that, well, really wasn't a five-year contract. We talk about his time at Stone Brothers and Erebus, the time he chased an intruder nude through his house with a baseball bat, true story, racing for Team 18, the breakdown of that relationship, the move to Tickford. He tackles the National Motor Racing Museum couch racer questions and the Motor Focus Top 10 shootout as well. And of course, he features as one of many drivers in our Bathurst Going Global book that celebrates 10 years of GT racing in the Bathurst 12-hour. Jump on our website, bookshop.v8sleuth.com.au, and you can get yourself $10 off. We're giving a discount. Use the code PEPPER, P-E-P-P-E-R, when you check out, and you'll get $10 off that book. The offer ends Feb 28, 2021. It's not valid with any other offer. Right, here we go. Buckle up. Time to start part two of Lee Holdsworth on the V8 Sleuth podcast. So you get your opportunity. Five-year deal. I forgot that bit. Five-year deal. So it's you and Canto, GRM 2006, Velvoline, Cummins, Repco, blue, white, red, Commodore VZ. So it's the last year of the VZ because VE came the next year. But I reckon there's a bunch, like we talked about the people along the way that are the like the marker stones. There's particular races and particular drives that are marker stones. And I reckon you know where I'm going here. In that era, and some of our listeners will forget this, in 2006 there was this whole, we've got to spice it up.
Mm.
So they had reverse grid races. Mm. It was three race formats back then for most of the rounds. They killed it later in that year because of the damage bills were racking up for the team owners. But the second race was a reverse. It was the reverse of the finishes of the first. If you didn't finish the first, you're still at the back for race two. So at Oran Park in Sydney, you lead, I think it was something to the tune of 25 laps in the second race. You finish third behind Scaife and Lowndes, who started down the back and came steaming through, and you finish third. And I will always remember Scaife coming down the pit lane to congratulate you because you held him out for a while.
Yeah.
You actually put your elbows out and went, no, I belong here. I'm going for this.
Yeah.
Did that stand out to you as big a moment for you as it did from my memory, Ben?
Yeah, that was pretty special. Like those guys were still my childhood heroes, you know, Lowndes and Scaife. To race, I remember, you know, like you said, I was leading that race for a long time and I remember them coming up on me pretty quick. But I knew, you know, I didn't want to make it easy for them because you need to gain some respect in the category. And the young blokes don't usually have much respect until they earn it.
Mm.
And it was my first year. You know, I'd been pushed around a fair bit that year. And it was time to show that I'm not just going to roll over. And yeah, so I had a bit of a dice with two of the legends of the sport. And they didn't finish too far ahead of me. Once they got past me, I think I did a reasonable job to sort of hang into that gap, and no one else was catching behind. So Scaife, yeah, came up, and that was a cool moment, like such a legend coming up and saying, great job. That was when I was like, geez, that's big, you know, like that was pretty special. Mm. So, yeah, that was the first mark where I was like, that's a special moment.
Mm. It's a standout. I vividly remember standing there in the pit lane and seeing him make a beeline to you to come and down and see you. Mm. I'm just looking at my notes here, and it's reminded me of something that I skipped earlier on. True or false, a few years before this, you entered the chance of a lifetime competition to try to win a V8 supercar drive.
I did.
You did?
And you know how I paid for it? I sold my road car for $4,000.
What sort of car?
It was a Commodore VK.
Oh,
V8.
Oh.
308.
Oh.
Yeah, killed me. Killed me.
And how much did it cost to go in the comp?
$3,500, I think.
Oh. And you didn't get through?
Didn't get through.
It was to win a drive in the Konica series in 03, yeah. I think yeah. it was, a yellow Falcon.
Yeah. But I think I was probably lucky I didn't.
This is probably a fair point, actually, because I'm not sure anyone had the chance of a lifetime managed to quite go much further than the chance of a lifetime car. But I think you got to the point where you were having your chance at your supercar lifetime by the time you got to that Oran Park race in 2006. Another thing that I sort of skipped over before, and we'll pick up the GRM conversation in a sec, but this year we're doing here at V8 Sleuth a Perkins Engineering book on all the cars of Larry's team from over the years. Now, some would be surprised that you're going to get a mention in there because you drove a Perkins-built car for Robert Smith back in the day, but it was, what, a VS for sports sedans with a 6-litre Chev banged in it. This is sort of when you were DVSing a
verging,
little bit.
Verging on getting into this. I think before I started the development series in 2004, I did a round – or I did a test day or something in that VS of Smithy's, and it was a 6-litre when I drove it. So I was a pretty powerful beast. And then later that year, you're going to have to correct me on this. I did the Phillip Island Magic.
Oh, the Magic. It was Island in 04. Magic. I looked it up.
Yeah,
which is 04. Which in the sports sedan category for the 50K plate, which is a very traditional award that Piarc have at the Island.
I think I was racing against old man Randall.
It may have been in the Saab. Yeah. There you go.
So that was cool because it didn't cost as much for Smithy to do it, and it set me up for the development series races. And I also did a race in that at Mullala.
Mm. I think it was the start of 05, I think, from memory.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
A state series.
That's
sort
right.
Of thing.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
And we won that round, and I remember there was a guy called Lyndon Punchon.
Oh yeah, he had a cobra.
A cobra.
Thing. Yeah.
and he had he was pretty big local over there. And every time I'd go to pass him, he chased me across the track to the inside. So there was the next lap, I thought, nah, it's not happening anymore. So I've stuck it in down the inside into the final hairpin, and he sure enough came across me and put me in the dirt. And I've just turned across because I'm not going into the dirt any further. So I've turned into him and I've taken the whole side muffler off the old Cobra, beautiful Cobra. And it didn't go down well with the locals there at all. And I went up into the truck and I remember Ryan McLeod telling all these people they can't come into the truck because they're trying to get to me.
So Punchin was trying to punch on.
It was trying to punch
it's
on.
His surname. Oh,
yeah.
Okay, right.
So that was a funny round, that one. But yeah, so that was cool to have that experience in the old Perkins car.
Yeah, you're in the book. We'll put you in the book because you did put your backside in that car a few times. So let's pick up the GRM chapter. So 2006 goes pretty well into 2007, and I remember you had a bell. I mean, when people think Holdsworth and shunts, they think Darwin, and we'll cover that off a little bit later. But you had a bell ringer at Winton where you backed it in at turn
four,
the old turn two. Good and proper. That was a big one. Everyone forgets that one, I think.
Yeah, and there's a little bit of a lead up to that story too because and then the day before we'd all been, obviously eating at the track and everyone woke up that next day with massive gastro bug, bad.
Racing like, drivers are full of it at the best of times, but everyone was in a bad
I remember I thought, I said, Alana was staying with me, and I said the next morning, like I'd been up all night throwing my guts up, and I thought, I don't know how I'm going to do this the next day. And I remember I was feeling really worried to then go down and see the team, Sherl, and say, I'm no good.
And for nickname clarity, if you didn't follow GM at the time, Kevin Scheuer was the team manager, Sherl.
Oh, was that
because he looked like Shirley Strong.
Yeah, right. I never knew that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I roll up to Sherl's room and he answers the door. I said,
"You too."
And I'm buggered. And he goes, "Oh, yeah, we're all buggered too." So that the whole team went down. There were people on the floor in the garage when we got to the track in fetal position, everything. Like, they were gone.
Not good.
And that actually made me feel a bit better. So we all got a shot from the doctor and then obviously went racing. And I was dizzy. I was buggered in the car. And it was a bit damp that day. And I remember I think I was running fifth or something. I was having quite a good run even though I felt so terrible. And I just dropped the wheel on the entry to turn four, the outside left, and away she went. And a lot of people have me to thank for those tyres going in against that wall.
So I remember Chas Most some years later backed the Pepsi car up onto those tyres, another Debore engineered driver, by the way.
Yes.
And there was no tyres there, though, in 2007. And you
no
turned
sand
your
trap, no tyres.
Just a wall.
Yeah. And the way it was, it just. Once you went off there, you didn't decelerate because it went downhill and then back up to the wall. So it was a big impact, and I went in backwards, and luckily I did, and it stoved it in. It was a hatchback.
Oh, it was a Barina by the end of
it.
Yeah.
And that chassis was chopped in half afterwards. But I went to hospital and got checked out. I was there for the night, couldn't race the next day, but. Yeah, I was dizzy after that for quite some time.
I remember it took you a little while to get your bearings back up.
Yeah,
the results went down for a couple of rounds before
they
came back up because you just can't bounce back straight away from that stuff. But when you bounce back good. Jim Beam 400, ring any bells?
Yeah.
Oran Park, in the wet again.
Yes.
So by that stage, the VEs are really up and rolling.
Yes.
And from my memory...
That was my first round in the VE, I think.
I think it might have been. I haven't looked that up before we sat down to do this.
So I
started the year in the older
VZ,
model car, which is the one that you back-ended at Winton.
Yes.
And I think you got your hands on your new one. Eastern Creek, I think, was the next round from my memory.
Yeah.
And then Oran Park wasn't too far down the line.
Yeah.
So my memories of that are that the first – in that era, it was three-race format, one on the Saturday, two on the Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Was dry on Saturday. I think Tander led early in the Toll HSV car. His suspension or something, the front broke. Mm-hmm. Scaife won the race. And then it absolutely hosed down on Sunday. What do you remember of your first race and round winning the main game? Because it was a wild day. Yeah, there's plenty going on.
I think I finished up ninth in that first race. I had a good battle with Jason Richards. And by that stage, I was pretty confident racing with all the guys. And I felt I sort of... You know, I was starting to make a little bit of a name, but I hadn't quite, you know, broken through to establish myself in the sport. And I think the Sunday, I think I qualified 10th the first day, something.
And this is progressive grids too. You start where you finish.
Yes. So I qualified 10th, finished 9th. And then the next day, we qualified. So then the next day I start ninth or something and in the first race and it's raining and I finished 10th. I finished 4th in the first race on Sunday in the wet and then we roll into the last race and Gary says, we're second row on the grid and Gary says to me, what are you thinking, mate? It's going to dry up. I reckon you run slicks. And I said, no. I said, I've just done the outlap. There's going to be 15 laps before you go to a slick. So we'll get a massive lead. If everyone's on slicks, we'll get a massive lead starting on wets. By then we can pit and put some slicks on. So he said, all right, your call, whatever you want to do. So we started on wets, and I think it was one or two on the grid also started on wets and the rest bailed in.
This was a weird race because there's about 8 cars on the grid or 10 or 12, whatever it was. Half the field's on the grid in their spots ready to go, but half of them are in the pits.
Yeah.
If you're trying to take the big start photo for the full field, you were sadly disappointed.
On the outlap, it started raining to the grid. So to start the race and everyone's bailed into the pits.
Except you.
Except me. There were a few on the grid.
Yeah.
But
no, but around you, I meant in terms that's of right, the leaders. Yeah. You were the only one in that front few that stayed out.
There were I forget who.
I should have looked at the video.
There were a couple. There were a couple in front of me that started. I think they started on slicks though.
Uh-huh.
So of course, by the first or second corner, I'm ahead of the pack, and just blazed on, and like I thought, how good's this? Like, this is brilliant. Like, and it makes you, yeah, you gain a heap of confidence from that. And each lap, I got more and more confidence. And James Small did an unbelievable job to tune that car for the wet as well. He was really good on shocks, and he softened the whole car off, and it was just a jet. And we were the fastest car out there. Even once everyone got back out on wet tyres, I was still quite a bit quicker, and extended the gap. And then there was a safety car, and I extended the gap again after that safety car, and then another one, and another one, and another one, and I'm thinking, come on, seriously, like how bloody hard do you want to make this for me? I think it was six safety cars in the end.
It was plenty. I can't remember how many, but there's lots.
And I kept extending the lead, and I think it's. I remember I watched the replay a couple of times.
Couple of hundred.
And Grant Denyer, I think, was commentating. I remember him saying it was the only race or one of very few races that someone had led from start to finish, because we pitted late as well.
Mm.
So we were always winning the race. And that was just unbelievable. Like, I came over the finish line, and I remember, like, as special as it was to me, I was thinking, this is my thank you to Gary, because, you know, obviously he'd put so much into it. And it was like, thanks, Gary. This is for you. And I remember the boys hanging over the fence, pumping their fists, and it was just the most unbelievable moment. And that still goes down as the best moment.
Ever. Yeah. Of any.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
The first taste is the sweetest taste.
Yeah. Big party. And then standing up there on the podium with Stephen Richards and Craig Lowndes, doesn't get much better.
Because that's the day of the round results.
Yes. I'd won the race, I'd won the round.
Yeah, most points wins the weekend, and the podium is based off the weekend points, not a podium for every race like we do now. So massive breakthrough on the board. I've arrived, surely.
Yeah.
You've got to be thinking I've arrived now. And Sunday night, that had to be a good night, surely.
Yeah, I remember we went back to Melbourne. You tweak, like you're bringing back all these memories, mate, because we're going through it step by step here. But I remember going back on the plane, and the boys were lit on the plane. That was just, it was happening. And we get back to Melbourne at about 12 o'clock. We roll in, I go back straight back to our house and get changed, and we're straight out in the town. I think we went to the Star Hotel or something. It was, I don't know what it was called.
South Melbourne.
That's it.
Yeah. Star Bar.
Yeah, Star Bar.
Yeah, remember it well.
And we just hit it hard. And it was, we're all just stoked. We're in another world. And then it was just like, righto, and the expectations went up.
Mm.
Yeah.
Did you have to work the next day?
I think they gave me half a day off.
Oh, half a day. You only get one day off when you win Bathurst, half a day for other rounds.
But I remember Gary, it might have been my second bonus check or something. And bonus checks, like, he gave good bonuses. And I remember him coming out with the bonus check, and he gave it to me in front of everyone. And I'm thinking, like, I actually need to bank that check. Like, I'm in a bit of debt here, because, you know, we were, I think I was, you know, it was $400-$500 a week or something I was making, and we just bought a heap of furniture, so we had finance and everything, and it was like $8,000 or something, and I thought, Jesus, that's you know, a 1/8 of my pay. Or no, sorry, that's one-fourth of my pay. It was a quarter of my pay for the year, really, in one payment.
One race. Perfect.
So that was a huge moment, but the boys expected something from it as well, because they had put in the hard yards and saw how much I got for it.
Every lap in under a minute. Every move made to matter. Every decision impacting the outcome of the race. Supercars in Perth. Every second matters. Bosch Power Tools Perth Super Sprint, May 17 to 19. Book now at Ticketek. Supercars, unforgettable.
2008. So by this stage, you're in what, year three?
Mm.
Robbo arrives without a nickname, gets one very quickly. Silly him. And it felt, I really, something that irks me about GRM, and I feel like it's almost, it's a late, and I've probably been guilty of it in the past too, the commentary reference to they punch above their weight. I reckon that's unfair. And that's not to say that it was the team with the most resources, but I reckon it wasn't a surprise to get the results that the team has got over the journey, but the results that you got in that period that you were there, because you had good people, lots of people who were there for a long time, who were a really well-gelled crew, well-gelled crew is what I'm trying to say. Good chassis, good capability. I think Walkinshaw Engines came back as a customer team around that time
and
as well.
And that was massive for us.
And that was the big bit that you were kind of missing.
That's right.
Around that time. So I never felt like you were punching above your weight. I always felt like that was a very capable team, that moniker wasn't probably, didn't quite fit, I didn't feel.
No, I agree. I think they were a team that could certainly run the top 10 in the championship, and we proved that. As a street car, they were
Sydney street
one
car.
Of the best.
What was it with you in Sydney Olympic Park? You were just the man there. Like Townsville, you were fast.
Yeah, but it was
Homebush. You just virtually had a mortgage on for a bit.
They had good grunt because we got the Walkinshaw engine at that stage. And we'd finally worked out how to get that power to the ground, because that was the biggest struggle once we got those engines was that, you know, they were a good wet car before then, because we did lack a bit of torque in the engines, and so we had better drivability off the corners. But then we got the Walkinshaw engine, and straight away we were faster, but we were wheel spinning. We couldn't stop, and we were tearing the tyres off it. We finally got on top of that, but we didn't lose the traits of the car and the strengths of the car. So we just made a big step forward from where we were. And they were always very pointy cars, very, you know, point and squirt sort of cars. They didn't like the longer radius corners. They turned really well. So those 90-degree type corners, Winton, and the street tracks, especially Homebush.
Oh, it was full of 90
just
degrees.
Made, the GRM car was made for that track. Yeah. And it was just it was the best car to drive around those circuits. You could just push harder and harder and harder every lap. And really, like, out of any, you know, for my whole career, that's the round where for 2 years we dominated, really.
Yeah.
We didn't put it all together the first year we were there, but the second year we really dominated that circuit. And
didn't you get 3 of the 4 poles or something like that from memory? Yeah.
So and one of the ones I missed out on was a second. So I got the first year I was second the first day and pole the second, and then the next year I was pole. So it was just awesome. Like, we had that thing in a really beautiful window. I think Caruso was on the second row. That was just a really cool weekend. But that car was mint on those tracks.
Mm.
Not so great on longer radius corners, your Phillip Islands, your Eastern Creeks. So we were sort of, it was a bit inconsistent, the package, but certainly, you know, when the opportunity was there, you had to take it.
And Adelaide, I remember too, was a place where you were pretty strong there for a couple of years. You were runner-up in 08 on the Sunday to Wink Up, and you were runner-up again, I think, to Wink Up again on the Saturday the following year. So street tracks, you wanted more street tracks. With that team and those cars, you would have munched
them up. I loved
it.
Yeah, I loved it. And I came out of Adelaide 1 year and second in the championship, and, you know, felt that we were going to have a really good year, which we did, but just never could stay up in that top, you know, 3 or 4 for the year. So, but you get to those street tracks and you made the most of it.
Your eyes lit up because the car lit up. That's definitely the go. 2010, I think it was when Fujitsu backing came along. I remember vividly, and I think there might be a fan question a bit later on in our National Motor Racing Museum Couch Racer questions. I vividly remember Bathurst that year. The history books show Craig Lowndes and Mark Scaife won. Yourself and Dave Barnard led most laps, pretty much half the race. Lowndes is still blowing up on his radio after getting held up and stuck behind Bezzy because he was not standard Happy Craig that day. He was very fruity on the radio. He was a bit fired up. And then I think, was there a drive-through? I'm kind of putting this in the category of, and everyone's got them and probably multiples in the your filing cabinet from back in your clerk days, of days that the Bathurst win got away.
Yeah.
Is 2010 the one that got away for
you? Yeah, that one still – it still hurts.
Sorry to bring it up. But there's, I think you got a drive-through after a driver change or something that kind of fizzled out.
We had a really strong car. I started the race. I remember whilst the roll of Coulthards was going on down at the chase, I was passing Mark Scaife into the final corner and to lead the race. Or it may have been Winterbottom next, but anyway.
You're in the front few.
We had a dominant car and we just was able to drive away from the field. I think we pulled an 8 second gap or something like that. And then Bezzy jumped in and did a ripper job. But he rags it. Like he doesn't leave anything on the table.
There was nothing left on the table.
And Lowndesy was up against him. And he came up on the back of him and Bezzy wasn't going to let him through. And I'm yelling at Richard Holway saying, mate, honestly.
Let him go.
It's so early in the race.
It's not even halfway. It was halfway, but it wasn't far. Yeah.
And anyway, he came in and the tyre was shredded. And I remember the commentators couldn't stop, carrying on about how good a job he did, which he did. He did a ripper job. But then I jumped in. And the next lap, I get told I've got a drive through, and I went nuts.
I remember hearing the radio.
On the radio.
Probably your biggest spat on the radio, I reckon, I've ever heard.
Yeah.
It was a good one.
I was one of the most angry I've been in a car for a long time, or forever. And I remember I said, that's bullshit. I didn't do the drive. I didn't speed in pit lane because that was what the penalty is for. Everyone was so flustered after that we came in and the next stop to finish the race, I was running seventh or something, and we served our drive through. We were in for the chance of the win, and then served the drive through, dropped back to seventh, and then we put the next set of tyres on. We're meant to be greens. We had a set of greens ready to go. And they put back on older tyres accidentally.
They got flustered from that penalty.
I was just wondering, what the hell's going on? Like, where's the speed gone? And, as a result, we ended up seventh. And I came in and I was still fired up.
But I think before that happened, though, you were part of the queue. And this is the irony. Everyone's big on the Fabian Coulthard, Debris 2019 stack job, which was the biggest stack job at Bathurst we've ever seen. But Tander did it in 2010 and you were behind him. You remember that? For the last stop, Will Davis and his teammate was ahead of him on the track.
Yeah.
And he banked the field back up and you were the next car in the queue behind him.
That's right. I do remember that. Yeah.
So you got held back there a bit because he didn't want to stack.
Yeah. And there was another time I was a little bit angry on the radio.
You were angry a few times that day.
I was punting into the back of him to try and get him to go, but he was trying to create the gap. Gary didn't believe me that I didn't speed.
They had pinged you for the speed on the way out?
Well, they didn't. They said they reckoned it was on the way out. Anyways, I said to Richard, I said, pull up the data. I'm not going to bed tonight without knowing that I didn't do this. And sure enough, Bezzy came in second gear rather than first. And I had to go and say something to Gary because, the last thing I need is for him to think that I'd thrown his team away a win too. That was the one that got away. Everyone's got their stories, but we had a mega car that day . So we move on.
Let's talk about a good day at Bathurst. It was the year before.
Mm-hmm.
So Caruso told us the story about he and yourself going to the team with this idea that you wanted to have a livery for Bathurst. And the way he told it, is that, I'm not sure if you've heard it or not, but give us your version of how that all unfolded, because it was a one-off livery that actually stayed on the car for, I think, another round or two.
Yeah.
You guys finished third. You held off Murph by, I think, 0.00 B's knee of a second.
Yeah.
Tell me, not just about that race, but about the whole process of – it's very rare that drivers end up coming up with ideas for their own liveries.
Yeah, it was – we got on well with Brushes, the sign writer there. Again, don't know.
Neville Bolton is his name, if you never knew. Do you know anyone's name from GRM?
No. So, yeah, and we were saying to him, mate, how good would it be to come up with a design for this car? Like, we need to do something for Bathurst to make it a bit special. I hope I'm consistent with Caruso's story here, because it's a bit.
One of you might get dobbed in for something here if you don't get this right.
And we went, yeah, we said to Brushes, because we knew Gary wasn't keen on the idea, because it cost, you know, another whatever to wrap the car, $4,000 or $5,000 or whatever. And I thought it'd be great for the sponsors. It'd just be cool to do something different. So Brushes came up with a design, and we said, righto, we'll try and sell it to Gary. So we put it forward to Gary, and he wasn't keen. I think Brushes brought up about 3 or 4 designs. And then so I'll have to listen to Caruso's pod to see what else happened. I forget. But we ended up getting it on the car, and it was really cool. Like, everyone was pumped, and it really fired everyone up for the round as well, which was our plan. We wanted everyone pumped, because it was, you know, him and I, Caruso and I teaming up, and it was a really good chance to have a result. So, yeah, it was a special one-off livery. And it was so good that they left it on Caruso's car for the rest of the year.
Hey, that's the ultimate endorsement for a new livery. If they don't peel it off as soon as the event's finished, they just decide to leave it on. Well, if you've spent $5,000 on the stickers, if you cover the cost over 4 rounds, not one,
yes,
it's a better deal. It's a better deal. Yeah. Did you think you'd got the podium position, or did you think Murph had nabbed you right on the line? Because I remember he was right. He was fired and filthy because they just missed a safety car earlier on. And he was coming through.
They were on fire. He was so fast. Absolutely.
But I remember, did you have a bobble at the chase on the last lap to give him a sniff to get
close? So we decided not to do rotors and pads for the last, or for the, you know, for the end of the race. Whereas everyone, you know, it's a pretty traditional thing to do, is have good brakes towards the end of the race. It's what you want to do. At least change them halfway through the race. But we thought we'd save ourselves the risk of costing ourselves more time in a pit stop and just run to the end of the race. And so I had a long pedal. It was starting to lock rears. When the pedal goes long, it tends to give you a bit more bias towards the rear. And so I was having a bit of a problem pulling the car up. And Murph was coming on hard and angry, and an angry Murph is a pretty,
not a good Murph,
crazy Murph. And but, you know, there was no way I wanted to let this podium go. So with 3 or 4 laps to go, he was on my tail, and I was running the white lines, you know, everywhere trying to hold him off. And I remember I came into the chase, and I didn't think I was going to pull it up. I thought I was going to spear off, and I've turned in, lost the rear a little bit, and given Murph a really good run coming out of the chase. And it was Murph and Scaife in that car, so some pretty big names and pretty legendary names of Bathurst. There was just no way. So he came down to the final corner. For the last 2 laps, I think, he was on my outside trying to do the crisscross. And I just pull it up enough mid-corner to not allow him to do the switchback. And so the last lap was the most stressful, to this day, the most stressful lap of my life. He was super quick on the straights too. I remember him towing up to me massively at the end of Conrod. And he had a go down the inside into the chase, and I blocked him. So then he got a good run out of the chase. He was right up my ass, and he actually was side by side with me coming to the last corner. And I thought, I've got him. I've got the inside here. And I get to mid corner, and I just stand on the throttle, like, you know, too hard, to the point where I came off the edge of the curb on the exit and didn't get the greatest run out. And I saw Murph do the switchback, and he was side by side with me over the line. And I did feel like I screamed over the radio that we'd got it. But then I was in doubt, and I'm thinking, actually, like about a meter after the line, he was in front of me. So I don't know.
Ooh.
And I was saying, you know, and then I'm just had severe anxiety thinking
that you just costed a podium.
Did we get it or not? Yeah, and I'm saying to the team, what's the go? Did we get it? Did we get it? And no one would answer.
Because they're all too busy screaming. That'll be why.
I didn't get anything until I started pulling into the pits, which was just around the exit of turn one. And they said, yes, mate, you got up by 0.017 or something like that, which ended up, I think it was a foot of track.
Nothing.
And the cheers and the tears at the time, they were.
And the beers.
Yeah, and the beers.
They all rhyme for a reason because they all go together.
Yes. So, yeah, crazy, crazy race. And a really proud moment in the career and especially for the names that we're able to hold off and to do it with Michael as well. Cool round that one.
Big day for Holden. I think it was Commodores 1, 2, 3, 4. Yes. So they ran it at the podium and Murph was the non-podium one in fourth. Do you know how to find the right oil for your car? Now you can find out quickly and easily online thanks to Castrol's Rego to Oil tool. Simply type in your Rego, select your state, and within seconds you'll know the best Castrol products to unlock the edge of performance in your car. So what's your car best suited to? Just search Rego, the number 2, and oil, and find out. Now, the five-year deal ends 2011, and then you move on to Stone Brothers.
No.
Yeah? 2012?
No, 2011 was actually my sixth year there.
Oh,
and this is the technicality.
Okay, hang on, rewind. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 is 5 years. Yes, you're right.
Yeah.
And I just naturally thought from your 5 years that this was.
Gary got me on a technicality.
Okay,
there,
right.
Too.
Do tell this. Hang on. So, how do you have a 5 year deal end up staying six?
So, my contract was for 5 years. That was okay. The agreement.
Yep.
But
there's always
signed. As it stated, we agreed verbally. It was 5 years. The contract said you are there from 2006, and finish in. I think it was just a typo. Errol, the guy that was there at the time, he just added 5 years onto 2006. So he's
which
just gone 5 on 6 to 2011.
Oh, and you didn't
tweak. But the structure of my contract was 5 years, so it was always intended.
But just the number was the thing that was.
So I said to Gary, because I was already looking at where to go for the following year.
I'll ask you about that in a minute.
And Gary said to me, because I went to him and I said, hey, I think I'm going to leave.
So no one picked it up at the time, the typo?
No.
Right.
I think I'm going to leave. I just want to give you the heads up that I'm looking around.
This is in 10.
Yes, yeah. I'm looking around. So I want you to know. So Gary said, well, you got another year. And I said, no. And he said, no, have a look at the contract. And he said, you got another year here. And I said, you and I both know that's a typo, Gary. And he held a straight face. He said, nah, that's what we always agreed on. So we came to a bit of an arrangement where I said, well, Gary, if this is going to work, although I was very happy being at GRM, there were things that I wanted to move forward with, you know, making the team better. And one of those things was engineer. And I said to him, if you get me Richard Holway, I'll stay.
So did you think, oh, boy, I'm not sure he's going to do this? Or
I think he knew that there was a bit of give and take there. Yep. Okay. Required for both sides to be happy. Because, you know, Gary knows that if a driver's not happy, he shouldn't be there anyway. And so we worked through that, and it actually worked out bloody good because Richard came along and
why did you pick Richard? He'd been at HRT and Walkinshaw's for really long time.
Yes. And I knew he was highly rated. He was one of the big name engineers back then. And, you know, everyone wanted someone from HRT because they were the team that were dominating, certainly in Holden. So, we somehow, Gary got him over. And yeah, that was a huge win. And then so 2011 was my final year there.
Hmm. So was there any realistic other places you could have gone if you could go at the end of 10?
Yeah. Well, there were a few times at GRM when I had an opportunity. One was HRT and one was FPR.
Now, the funny thing is when drivers talk about these situations, we tend to find that multiple drivers talk about the same opportunities, and it turns out that teams were talking to them all, yeah, telling them all the same thing.
Yeah.
So was your HRT one when...
Scaife left.
Right, yes.
Hmm.
2000 and end of 08.
Sorry,
yeah, end of 08 he finished up full-time.
Yeah.
2009,
yeah,
Will Davis.
That's right, there. Yeah.
So that was a chance.
So they were, they, yeah, that was, well, it wasn't because I was in a contract.
No, but there was a, there was discussions.
Yes.
From HRT, from Holden, from...
I forget who called, but yeah, from HRT. So, yeah, obviously that opportunity went by the wayside and didn't go into too many, too much depth because...
Hmm.
It was a non-event. It was never going to be. So, and then there was an opportunity at the end of 2010 to go with FPR,
mm-hmm,
in the number five car, I think it was, or six car.
Six car, because yes, Steve Richards was leaving.
Yeah, yep. To fill Richo's spot. And that's why I then went to Gary and I said, you know.
Because you had that,
yeah,
offer on the table.
Yes.
Yep.
And so, you know, I ended up staying at GRM. And then for the following year, I then had an offer from SBR and FPR again, and a couple of others, but I was interested in those two. And I ended up obviously going with Stone Brothers, because I didn't want to be a third car.
So at FPR, you would have been the bottle,
the bottle car
that,
yes,
Reynolds,
yep,
ended up in.
Yep. Yep.
Because you felt like you'd be the third citizen and...
Yeah, I didn't want to be sharing a boom with an unknown, you know, mm-hmm, an unknown team. I just felt there was a lot less control. And those, in those days, a third car was a third car, you know. Although the way that FPR did it, it wasn't. They did a really good job of it. But, yeah, I just saw this third car status as you were third in line.
And
yeah. I didn't want that. And I got the drive with Stone Brothers being the second driver to Shane Van Gisbergen. So
you went in there being told you were the second driver or feeling you were the second
you
driver?
You sort of get to – you know that. You don't come into any team as the number one driver unless, you know,
it's
you
real
win
clear.
The championship or something, yep, like that.
Yep. When did you know that you wouldn't be driving a Falcon for too long? Because the thing changed pretty quickly.
Yeah, it was probably I forget when exactly. It was probably about two thirds of the way through the year in 2012, and we'd already, I think, Stone Brothers had a contract with Ford to build a Ford car of the future.
Well, they did. Well, they build did. And they did. Test one. I think you might.
But they knew at that point that they were going to a Mercedes for the following year, but they had to build that as a part of their contract. So I did a lot of the testing in the Car of the Future, and it was going to be a ripper car. Like, it was – I finished eighth there in my first year at Stone Brothers, and I felt, you know, that the reason I – my step after GRM was to get in a team that I can win a championship with. And, yeah, I signed a three-year deal with Stone Brothers. And then, yeah, two-thirds of the way into that year – Betty, you know, bought part of the team, and then we learnt that we were going to be driving a Mercedes for the following year, but not with Mercedes backing, with AMG Customer Sports backing.
Mm. Which a lot of fans keep saying about the Mercedes.
Mm.
The Mercedes, the company, wasn't involved,
no,
didn't want it to happen, didn't want to have anything to do with it. It was the connection to AMG Customer Sport, particularly from an engine point of view, that allowed that whole program to even occur. Did you contemplate trying to leave, to look for a loophole to get out? Because, of course, history shows Van Gisbergen got out and got to Techno through whatever means he needed to do it. Did you embrace a new challenge? It was exciting at the time.
It was really exciting. And especially, you know, that name, having a Mercedes badge on the car and AMG supporting you, HWA in Germany, you know, they're a big company and they know what they're doing. So I was excited and it really felt like this was going to be, Stone Brothers, my big thing was, are the Stones still going to be involved? And Jimmy obviously moved on. Ross was still there. So I thought, this is good.
Like, and the nucleus of the people was there too.
And the same people. And, you know, the people are what make a team and the culture and everything. So they had that winning culture. They worked hard, really hard. But the program was very difficult. It was very difficult. The Mercedes, although the chassis was the same, we actually converted the Car of the Future Ford into a Mercedes. So everything underneath was the same. But then the aero kit was hard. Straight out the box, we had issues with vibrations, front splitters coming apart, tearing apart. Nothing was strong enough. And just a lot of stuff kept going back and forward to HWA to improve. The engine package was the hardest thing because I think they put in a 5.8 litre, I think, but it was reduced, it was downsized to a 5 litre, which made, made things very difficult. They had a flat plane crank. They had
sounded awesome.
Twin throttle body. And they ended up going to the individual throttle bodies after a while because we couldn't get it to work. So it was really rough. That first year was really rough, but we pushed on. Everyone, put in huge hours and they got the cars going, like handling great. The cars handled really well. Because in the end it was really just the Stone Brothers car with a different body shell on it. But the biggest problem was still our engine. They were overheating. The first year in Adelaide, I had my foot out the door in every pit stop.
I remember trying to your boots, weren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was a tough one, and it sort of took a toll on the momentum of my career. And then the following year, we had some good stuff coming, and that did improve the package quite a bit. They worked on the engines quite a bit over the break, and actually Stone Brothers started having a lot more input into their engine.
Because before it was put in a box, send it back to Germany,
So, they had the Stone Brothers engine builder still working on the engines and doing a lot of dyno work and picked up quite a bit of pace with them. They were really strong in top end, but just lacked the drivability and the torque, and really struggled with temperature. So they'd just drop a heap of horsepower. So some tracks they'd go half right, and then other tracks they were pretty bad. So yeah, it was again another really hard year, and it was to the point where I was like, well, do I keep going with this? Do I keep pushing? And I just felt like that package, unless they were going to throw that engine out and start again, it really wasn't – there was no light at the end of the tunnel. And I loved that team. Like the people there were great. A lot of really good people there are now at Penske DJR and in other really good teams. Wes McDougall, now Wincup's engineer. It was really disappointing because you put in so much effort and just got little reward. We got some reward, but just not what you wanted.
I want to talk to you about the reward. It was Winton 2014, where you scored a win that was Erebus's first in supercars. They'd obviously won in GTs and the 12-hour and stuff like that. Was it you versus Coulthard and a few guys in the mix that weekend? Was that the weekend that the track had the sealant in it and suddenly everyone was like 2 seconds a lap faster? It was crazy. It and was there was crazy. Another thing that happened that week too that this is in our National Motor Race Museum catch racer questions, but I should just throw it in now. It's tell us about the time you got out of the shower and chased a house intruder up the street naked with a baseball bat. That started that your week.
That started my week, yeah.
Tell us what happened before we get to the Winton bit.
Yeah, did
you have a towel on? Did you have boxes or were you nude running down the street?
So we just moved into our new house that we were getting built in Brisbane, and beautiful little place. And it was about 2 weeks into just moving in. And we didn't have blinds or anything. I remember we headed into the – Alana was having a shower. I was going in to have my shower when she was jumping out, and I saw a guy out the front in a hoodie just walking by but looked up. And I thought, that's a bit weird. Anyway, so I go for my shower. Alana's now out in the walk-in robe, which is just next to the shower, and all our lights are off because – you know, without blinds, you don't want to have the lights on.
You don't want to say, hello, here yeah. I am.
And all the lights downstairs were off. So the place was really dark. And I remember I could see Alana as she was stepping outside the bathroom towards the walk-in robe, and she started screaming at the top of her lungs. And I the first thing I thought was she's looking at Ava, who was only about 2 years old then. And something, you know, she was on the floor.
Mm.
And so I freaked out, and I've jumped out of the shower, still wet, with shower running, everything, and no towel.
All out there.
And she couldn't talk about I was trying to get out of it. What just happened? What? And she said, someone's in here. And I said, what? She said, someone was right here in front of me about 2 meters in front. They've just run downstairs. So I've bolted downstairs and not even thinking, you know, it was just rage.
And if you'd stopped and thought about it?
It was stupidity.
Mm.
And so I'm slipping and sliding, going down the stairs and banging into the walls, putting big dents in the walls because I couldn't get any traction. And I get downstairs and it's pitch black.
What time of the day are we talking here?
10:30 at night or 11?
Yeah.
I'm flying out to Winton the next day at 8 a.m. And so I get downstairs and I'm yelling, like I'm just swearing. And I thought he was down the back near the back sliding door.
Had you made the link that this is the guy I saw outside?
No, not at that point.
Okay.
No. And I was yelling out, I'm giving you the opportunity to get out the back door now. And nothing happened. So after about another 2 minutes, I thought, what am I doing?
And I'm getting a bit cold.
I don't have any, like I didn't want to walk down to the kitchen because I knew there's knives, all sorts of stuff down there. So I ran upstairs. Alana threw me down some shorts and then.
Very kind of her.
And then I grabbed the baseball bat.
The baseball bat live at your house?
It was up in the cupboard because it still hadn't been unpacked.
So you play baseball?
No, I got it from Austin, Texas when I went there in 2012.
Okay.
And the Louisville Slugger, I think it was.
It was going to come in handy for a bit of slugging. Yeah.
So I've then searched the whole house and no one was there, but we got the cops there and they brought the sniffer dogs and everything. But the scary thing was they did the fingerprinting, and after I went away, Alana went and stayed with her dad. I came back on the Monday and where the place had been fingerprinted – you could see fingerprints, which we thought was natural. But then on the back door, there were fingerprints from powder on the back door. So he'd come back over the weekend, which was pretty scary. So we installed security, everything. We got CrimSafe to deck us out.
So came back while you were at Winton and
she was at Hawaii? Yeah.
And was anything gone?
No, you couldn't get in, but yeah, it was. That was the scariest thing. We thought we'd scared him. We thought we would have scared him off enough. But, so that was a bit scary and scary for Alana. But anyway, so I went off to Winton the next day. Practice was real sketchy because of that stuff down on the track, that sticky stuff that they'd patched up all the cracks with. And if you got offline, it was just so skatey. So after a while, the track really started gripping up because it was just that stuff was spreading everywhere. And it just worked. Like for our car, it just worked. I think I qualified fourth or fifth on the first day and finished up top five the first race, and then the second race was still on the Saturday. My car just lit up and won the race. I got Coulthard in the last couple of laps. Had Winterbottom chase me down the last few laps, but we had good enough pace to hold him off. And then the next day, all the rubber stuff that was down had gone. So our car was shocking the next day. I qualified 15th or something and didn't race much better. But but to get that win and to see the satisfaction on Betty's face, because she'd pumped so much money in over those couple of years, and to give something back again to the guys after the countless hours and heartache that we'd all been through was really cool. So that was the best part of those couple of years.
It was a weird week that started weirdly and ended well. So I remember a few rounds later at Sydney Motorsport Park, the week of, there's a press announcement goes out that says you've re-signed or you're re-signing with Erebus. I remember sitting with you in the grandstand and we did an interview for V8 Extra, the Channel 7 supercar show that used to be on back in that day. That was the last year of Channel 7. Of course, they're back this year with supercars. And it was an interview in regards to, obviously, we talked about Winton, we talked about your journey before that and staying with this team and why and how. Mm. But you didn't stay with that team.
Mm.
How does a team announce a driver staying and then he doesn't stay is the basic question, I guess.
Yeah, I'm known for my handshake deals, and the boys, you know, all my mates give me a bit of crap about that because most of my sponsorship deals, personal stuff on my helmet are just done through knowing people and having a relationship with them, and a shake of the hand is as good as a signature on a contract. Ryan Madison was the CEO or general manager at the time of Erebus, and we'd verbally agreed on a deal. And at that point, not a lot of people knew this, but there was a bit of a link with Volvo for the following year. So
this does ring a bell.
Yeah.
So was Volvo talking about coming in? And GRM wasn't the first point of call,
quite possibly at that point, yes. So I was pretty excited about that, considering the Volvo was going quite well. And
so to rewind over it, that Erebus would become a Volvo team for 2015.
Yeah,
and that's what made you go.
Because the
Mercs are struggling. It's not going to get there. Let's go with something that's getting there.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, my thoughts exactly were, doesn't matter how much money, doesn't matter how anything, because at this point, you know, I'm still wanting, you always want to win a championship, but I still had those hopes in mind. So, that was like, righto, this could be good. So, I had that agreement with Ryan and then, a few rounds later at Bathurst, I got tipped on my lid from Russell Ingall.
Yep.
And so I was on a pretty...
After you'd already had a wall banger at Sandown a few weeks beforehand.
And they'd announced it in the media a few...
It was the week before of Sydney, because I remember we sat in that grandstand, and the reason why we did the interview was because you had... The announcement was out, you were starting.
Yeah. And that weekend was meant to be where the deal was made with Volvo.
Mm-hmm.
So on the Sunday night, after going through all that, Betty then said to me, she came up to my camper van and we'd had a few drinks together, and she said, "I'm sorry, but the deal for next year with, you know, the manufacturer isn't..."
You knew who it was.
Yeah. "Isn't looking great. The deal's basically fallen through. So we'd love to have you." And so for me, that was like, okay.
That's not what I agreed to. Yeah.
And I thought, well, you know, I question, okay, well, what are we doing? What are we going to do to make things better and, you know, to start winning some races? And it didn't really add up to me that it was going to be much better. I knew it was still going to improve, but it just wasn't going to be where I needed it to be for the following year. It was going to take too much more time, and time really wasn't starting to be on my side. So I rang around and I got an opportunity with Charlie Schwerkolt, and it was going to be in a in a FPR car, which is where I'd
could have been a few times before. Yeah, you had a few goes at that whole Campbellfield thing, didn't you?
Had a few
you knew
goes.
How to get there before you ended up getting there.
Yeah, and yeah, so.
But by this stage, were you your thing for not going there some years before had been you didn't want to be the third car.
Yeah,
but by this stage, you're going to be the fourth car because they had two of their own. Rod Nash's franchise.
It wasn't an ideal situation,
but a gig's a gig.
But the way I thought about it, it was four cars. It was a four car model now. It wasn't a three car. So you always
boomed with the team. Yep.
So I thought it can't be too bad a gig, and they were doing a ripper job back then too. Actually, that year where I should have been in that car, the FBR car for 2014. I think they had a ripper year. So that was, anyway, so I'll get to that. But so after a while, I was like, beauty, I'm going to FBR. This is going to be good. And then Charlie says to me, oh, there's a sponsor clash. We can't be there. So we've gone with Walkinshaw. So I'm like, okay, all right. not what I thought I was going to be doing, but okay. And really the Walkinshaw car for that next year wasn't in the right window, and it was a bit of a tough one. So, 2014 was a hard year. I think I finished up 14th in the championship. And then Charlie decided he'll do his own thing. So away he went
Standalone team.
Yeah. Press Sorry, I'm day. I'm talking 2015.
15. So, 15 was the year with Charlie and the Walkinshaw car. Yep. 16 was the
first breakaway year of Charlie's work. Oh, team 18. Yeah.
Yep, correct. Preston Hire Racing. So, 3 years with Charlie, and it didn't go the way that you would have liked it to. What like 18? It clearly just the relationship broke down.
Mm-hmm.
Why, how, looking back on it, could you have done things different? Could he have done things different? How did it all end up?
I think, we both got pretty frustrated after 2017 wasn't too bad a year. I think we found a bit of a window for the car. And I had Chris Stuckey that year. He was doing quite a good job. And then Chris left at the end of that year. And in 18, we went to the new model, and straight out the gate, there was something just not right. Like the car just wasn't working. It was crap, and so we wondered. You know, we went back through the books, and we're like, why? Like, what's going on here? And it just nothing worked for us. And I started getting quite frustrated with it and expressed my opinions to Charlie, who tried to fix things. He did what he could, but after a while, I think he got sick of hearing me whinge about it because nothing was changing. And really what we needed was some engineering expertise. We needed some input from another team because we were so far out of the window. It was terrible. And so then, Charlie's and my relationship broke down a fair bit. And then, we were always very close. And then we started, Charlie and I stopped talking to each other a bit, and then it just all went wrong. And the car was breaking down every couple of races, and it was very, very frustrating. So towards the end of that year, I started ringing around because it was the last year of my career at Team 18. And then I think Charlie caught word that I was looking around, and I'm sure he was probably thinking the same thing anyway. I think we're on the same page there. But yeah, so he started talking to Mark, and I knew that was going on. And I was like, well, this could work out all right.
You just swap spots.
So in the end, we swap spots.
Yeah. It's funny it works out.
It is.
Do you have any lingering effects from that Darwin crash in 2016, the one that busted you up and put you out of the saddle for a couple of rounds? Is there anything these days that affects you, or are you repaired and all good?
You know what? My ribs sometimes hurt. It's crazy because my pelvis healed so quickly. It was never really that sore apart from when I crashed.
Did it, yeah. So just to recap, pelvis, ribs.
Pelvis, three ribs, and right knee was broken. Yeah. So that came across and whacked the brake bias adjuster and snapped it clean off the...
Smashing gear shifts, knees are strong.
Yeah.
Are you on board with the thought of a paddle shift, by the way?
I think for safety, it's a good thing. Because it's another thing that you can't whack your leg onto, because that was what broke Chaz's leg. And
but even with that leg protection there now, that takes that away or not take it away? There's a lot of fans who don't want to see
I think the older, I don't know, the older drivers like myself, I think, would like to see a bit of that stay in the category, but then you've got to make the category relevant as well. And it's not really, it's becoming less relevant for road cars, because no road cars have, sequential shift on the floor. Everyone's got paddle shift now, and it makes sense to go down that path. But, I guess I'm a bit of an old school racer. Like I like the cars to be hard to drive because it shows the driver's skill and it makes it harder. And, I think you should have to work for it rather than just, paddle shift. It's another thing that is not a challenge for the driver.
True.
I'm in two minds about it. It's hard to...
A drive's a drive. You'll drive whatever you get given.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I wouldn't complain about it if I was...
Mate, if you had the H-pattern, you'd drive Bathurst. Don't worry about that.
Absolutely.
Billy Carr, you'd be doing it. We've stolen so much of your time. I'll wrap it up very quickly. National Motor Racing Museum are big partners of ours. Our Couch Racer questions, it's some of the fans' questions. We'll zip through them. We've kind of covered a lot of them in our chat. Racing Viewer on Twitter... Best and worst attributes of the AMG E63 supercar.
Oh, I think I've said them.
So you've covered it.
Yeah, the worst was the performance of the engine, in lower revs, but the best was in the upper revs. The thing pulled hard, and also it handled well.
Daniel asks on Facebook. He's referring to a day at Winton in 07. When GRM took off the front under tray and rear wing of a VZ supercar as part of an experiment for supercars. Yes. I guess you must have been the driver in this. Do you remember it?
I was the guinea pig, yeah. I remember Gary saying to we wanted to put the point forward to the board was we don't bloody need downforce. And I can tell you it was the worst car I've ever driven. Like, there was just no downforce at all. And it doesn't – For the listeners, it's not like it just being like a TCM car, like a Touring Car Masters car after that. It takes everything away from any balance in the car or any driving ability. You can't pull it up under brakes because it locks rear. So the way that the cars are developed, they're developed around having that aero. So if you started with no aero, then you develop the car to suit that package, like a TCM car. Mm. But a supercar, you take the air off it and it is
bad.
It's bad.
I thought you were going to say something else then.
Yeah.
We'll keep racing through them. Damien, are there any races or events overseas that you're keen to do before you retire?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to go and do a 24-hour Spa or...
Oh, yeah, that'd be cool.
Or Le Mans or Nürburgring would be cool.
Yep.
Yeah, there's certainly a few things that I'd love to race at most tracks overseas. Monza, there's so many tracks that are on my bucket list.
It's a big bucket list.
Mm.
Big bucket list. Corey's a bit of a food fan. He sends in questions on Facebook all the time. Is it a potato cake or a potato scallop?
potato scallop.
Is this a Queensland thing?
Yeah.
Right.
But then now I feel weird saying because potato scallop. Because
you live in Victoria, yeah. So you've got to say potato cake.
Yeah,
to fit
it's like in. Potato scallop's like a potato sea creature, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. Corey comes up with good food questions. They do make you think. We covered Johnny's question about the nickname Lethal and how you managed to slip that through. We've covered Robbie's question, who's asked about your big crashes and if you had any pain or you need any ongoing treatment, which you're looking all right to me, so you're laughing and smiling, so that's okay. We've covered Team 18 and how things ended up there. So we kind of have covered a lot of those questions through the pod. Thanks, everyone, for sending them in. Before we finish, this is our way we finish. You've done plenty of these in your time. Top 10 shootouts. You've nailed plenty of these over the years. Word association. I'll say something. You give me the first word that comes into your head. If it's really rude, we'll bleep it, but if it's a little bit rude, we'll leave it in. All right, ready? Michael Caruso. What's the word that springs to mind?
Oh, mate.
Thought you were going to say something else there. Anyway, Dean Canto.
Bald.
That's rich coming from you. Betty Clemenko.
Character.
TCR.
Challenging.
Gary Rogers.
Legend.
Brett Holdsworth.
More than a brother. I don't know. Put that into one word.
I put a hyphen between them all and it becomes one word, I think is the way to get around that. Sebastian Bourdais.
And
you can't say French.
No.
For those who are wondering why I'm asking your co-driver in 2015.
No, I know what I want to say. I'm trying to put it into a word. But
if you can't put it into one word, you can use multiple words.
He's a legend. He's a great guy, but man, he's hard. He's hard work.
Intense?
Yeah, intense.
Too intense.
He's intense.
Needs to relax a bit more.
No, he's great though. I'm not critical of him. He's just he's a true Frenchman.
I would have thought 10 years earlier when he was pounding around winning the Gold Coast Indy races, you would have never guessed you'd co-drive with him.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, pretty cool. Oran Park.
One of a kind track. Mm.
It's under someone's house at the moment.
Yeah. I got a street there now.
Have you got a street?
I got a street.
Is it Holdsworth Street?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know.
Or Holdsworth Way or Holdsworth Avenue?
Something like that. I've got a photo. Someone sent me a photo.
Oh, that's cool.
So all the race winners there got a street.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like it. I like a bit of acknowledgement of history. Mm. Mercedes E63.
Stressful.
And to finish off, Hidden Valley.
Hidden Valley. Hot. I don't know. That's a bit boring though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a little bit. But you've given us really good answers on just about everything else. So we'll kind of let you off the hook. Yeah. Mate, 213 supercars. I like to give some stats. 213 supercars round starts. You are in the top, I think it's 12 of drivers all time. There's only like 11 or 12 guys that have started more rounds in 60-odd years of championship history. So I'll leave you that to take away with because I think that's pretty impressive.
No, that's cool.
475 races, 3 great wins, 14 podiums, 4 pole positions. As always, though, it's not always all about numbers. It's how you do it and how you go about it. So for the kid from Commodore Cup to get through the journey, and I think we've covered most things. We've probably skipped a few things along the way that we haven't had time to get in. I'm sure there's a few more chapters left to write. We'll be keeping an eye on that TCRL for this year. By the time this comes out somewhere down the track, we're keeping an eye for our email box to find out where you're going to drive in the Enduros. But as we finish this episode, please say hello to Chazzy for us.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks for having me
on. And all the
on.
Other it's people that enjoyed. You know in the supercars pack.
No, I've enjoyed it, mate. Thank you.
I really loved that chat with Lee Holdsworth. I hope you did too. We got great feedback last week about part one, and I know Lee got plenty of great feedback too, so thanks everyone who has enjoyed our little chat. I really got a lot out of it. It was great to catch up with Lee Holdsworth. Don't forget too, you can visit us online. v8sleuth.com.au is the place. We are the authority of all things Australian motorsport, and jump in our online bookshop too. The website address for that is bookshop.v8sleuth.com.au.
au. Thanks for all your feedback on the podcast too. Keep the questions rolling in. Tell your mates, subscribe, leave a review as well. We love to see what you think about the show. And you can, of course, follow us on all the social platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We've always got something going on. And you can also sign up through our website to the V8 Sleuth newsletter. It gives you the latest in our news on the website, special offers, and a whole pile more. In the meantime, we're done. Episode 90 is in the books. 10 to go before we get to the century. What are we going to do to celebrate 100? We'd love to hear your feedback and your thoughts as well. In the meantime, though, I'm Aaron Noonan. We're done for the V8 Sleuth podcast. We'll chat to you again in 7 days' time. Do you know how to find the right oil for your car? Now you can find out quickly and easily online, thanks to Castrol's Rego to Oil tool. Simply type in your Rego, select your state, and within seconds you'll know the best Castrol products to unlock the edge of performance in your car. So what's your car best suited to? Just search Rego, the number 2, and oil, and find out.